called to order. Today is Thursday, March 27th, and we are getting started late today. I apologize to everyone who has been very patiently waiting for our committee to begin. As I understand it, members of the DFL caucus are going to be on their way down. So we're going to begin hearing the first bill, Senate File 2775. The lead author on that bill is Senator Port, who is on her way, and I am a co-author on that bill, so I'll stand in so we can get started on the bill. And I will hand over the gavel while we do that to our minority lead, Senator Dornick, who has graciously agreed to do that. And I will just say that because we are getting a late start today, typically we like to give people a lot of time to really just say everything that they feel they need to say, but today I'm going to very respectfully ask if you would really, really try to keep your testimony to 2 minutes or under so that we can try to get everybody in. And with that, I will hand it over to our lead, Senator Dornick. Thank you, Senator Dornick.
Thank you, Senator McEwen. So we'll ask a couple of the testifiers to come up. So Shannon Cunningham and Adam Carlin, if you wanted to come up to the table. Senator McEwen, if you want to tell us about your bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Today, I am very proud to open up the presentation of Senate File 2775, a bill that is the lead author is Senator Port, who we hope will be joining us here shortly. This bill has to do with staffing levels at our hospitals and takes an attempt to try to alleviate some of that that is being experienced by nurses who are providing the care for people in Minnesota. And I'm going to go ahead and just right away turn it over to Shannon Cunningham to begin a walkthrough of the bill and to talk about it, who is Director of Governmental and Community Relations with the Minnesota Nurses Association. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair McEwen, Senator Dornick, and Senator Port, who will hopefully be here shortly, and committee members for allowing me to speak today on behalf of the Minnesota Nurses. As you were told, my name is Shannon Cunningham. I'm the Director of Governmental and Community Relations for the Minnesota Nurses Association. And as many of you may have seen, because we put it in every letter we send you, MNA represents more than 22,000 registered nurses working at the bedside in hospitals across our state. And we recently have had more than 1,000 new nurses join our ranks who will soon have collective bargaining agreements, which will increase our density. Long before the COVID pandemic, nurses were coming to the Capitol sounding the alarm about the ongoing corporatization of healthcare and what it was doing in our hospitals. These hospitals are the backbone of our healthcare system. As consolidation and corporatization continue to wreak havoc on our healthcare system, nursing staff are being told to do more with less year after year, and many nurses are at their breaking point. Both MNA studies and other academic studies show that nurses are leaving or plan to leave the bedside at higher levels than have ever been seen in history. These are educated, highly trained, and highly skilled workers. And at one point, registered nurses in hospitals were given the ability to exercise their independent judgment based on the present facts and their training to try to make a decision in the best interests of their patients. Over time, that autonomy has not only eroded, but it's been replaced. We now see a corporatized, profit-based view of labor relations that treats these nurses as interchangeable and even dispensable. Rather than addressing issues that are within the control of the employers, like supporting workers, retaining workforce, unfortunately, executives are looking for more ways to justify even worse staffing grids. We've been coming to the legislature for over 2 decades now, asking for intervention, and in each and every one of those years, the situation has only gotten worse. Some years, members of the legislature have told our union to try for safe staffing ratios at the bargaining table, Trust us, we have tried. And each time when we do try, employers tell us, go to the legislature if you want better staffing levels. And so we've tried. Nurses are caught in a constant ping pong ball game of going back and forth and being told to go to different places to try to protect themselves and their patients. You all saw us here in 2023, where rather than introducing a ratio bill like the one that you guys are seeing today, we proposed an alternative. We'd been listening to legislators for years tell us, come back with a better compromise. We can't quite do what you guys want to do. Bring us something else back. And so these nurses that you see behind me, they worked hours and hours to try to pull together something that they thought they could live with. Unfortunately, that bill was killed. The corporatization of healthcare is strong. The power that the hospitals have in our state is so strong, and they were able to kill that bill, despite the fact that nurses knew it wasn't exactly what we needed. This particular legislation that you guys are hearing today explicitly addresses what nurses are saying they need. They don't want a compromise bill. There is no need for a half-baked solution. Nurses and patients need safe, legally binding nurse-to-patient ratios in hospitals, not only to protect the patients, but because the safety of nurses demands it. This is truly a labor issue because it addresses the rampant retaliation, workplace violence, and injury issues in hospitals that are a result of unsafe staffing levels. With that, I will walk through the labor relations portions of the bill within the jurisdiction of the committee, and welcome, Senator Port.
Thank you.
As I stated, Senate File 2775 is a bill that would require hospitals to provide registered nurse staffing at levels consistent with nationally accepted standards. It would require reporting of staffing levels and prohibit retaliation against healthcare workers that raise concerns. Subdivision 2 of the bill has a series of definitions such as nursing intensity and patient acuity, which are based on nationally recognized nursing definitions. Subdivision 5 requires hospitals to adopt and implement staffing plans that specify the maximum number of patients that can be safely assigned to an RN, nursing assistant, or other direct care staff for each unit at any given time. It clarifies that these plans must include flexibility to increase the RN number if patient or nurse safety is at risk. It requires the plans are developed in collaboration and in agreement with staff and lays out some of the ways that those things interact with collective bargaining so that bargaining units approve plans before they go to the state. Subdivision 6 talks about assignment limits for RNs, laying out the minimum staffing of RN staffing level for the hospitals. This includes ratios such as one-to-one care for a patient who's in an operating room, a trauma unit, actively giving birth, or in immediate jeopardy of death. There's a one-to-two patient ratio for things like critical care and ICU, neonatal ICU. There is a one-to-three ratio for patients in newborn nurseries, postpartum couplet units, and pediatric units and emergency departments, and 1-to-4 for acute psychiatric units, chemical dependency, and then 1-to-5 for skilled nursing. 6B clarifies that hospitals with lower patient assignment limits are not required to increase them or create patient assignment limits for units that they don't have. It also does not limit the rights of nurses to bargain around patient assignment limits. Subdivision 7 sets a requirement that non-rural hospitals comply and sets some dates, a different one for rural hospitals versus non-rural hospitals, understanding they may need some more time to come into compliance. Subdivisions 8, 9, and 10 reiterate that only direct care registered nurses who are appropriately trained can be included in the ratio, and it prohibits nurse executives such as nursing administrators and supervisors from being included in that calculation unless they spend at least 60% of their time doing direct patient care. And it also prohibits averaging of patients and RNs to meet those limits. Subdivision 11, which is assignment adjustments, just requires hospitals to assign staff consistent with the plans and the criteria, and then dictates that RNs can evaluate those staffing levels to determine if they're sufficient. That criteria includes things like how sick the patient is. That's called patient acuity. The skill mix of the nurse, the experience of personnel, and the intensity of the nursing assignment. Subdivision 11B prohibits hospitals from assigning RNs, whether temporary or permanent, to care for patients if they don't have adequate training or orientation, or if they feel, under the law, the Nurse Practice Act, that they are not able to meet the care needs of that patient in a safe manner. That section also provides guidance on what the hospital's chain of command should consider when they are looking at claims of inadequate staffing on the unit and lays out a process to keep patients safe until additional staff are able to arrive. Subdivision 12 prohibits hospitals from using mandatory overtime, untrained or unoriented nurses, layoffs of other personnel, or forcing nurses to violate the Nurse Practice Act to meet the ratio standards. It also prohibits retaliation and discrimination of all forms against nurses who communicate patient assignment objections. Subdivision 13 provides an exemption to these standards. Obviously, if there's an emergency situation, we want to make sure that they are able to have some leeway there. Section 2 of the bill prohibits utilizing inappropriate units to care for patients, so not able to transfer a patient to a different unit with a lower or a higher ratio so that we can save money. Also limits the use of technology and artificial intelligence to substitute for parts of patient assessment or to limit nurses from performing functions that require nurses. Section 4 prohibits retaliation and discipline for nurses for reporting concerns with an assignment or objecting to an assignment that would force them to violate the Nurse Practice Act, which is also in statute. Section 7 amends existing statute to further clarify that healthcare workers who report incidents of unsafe care cannot be disciplined as long as the report is filed within 10 calendar days. I will just note that nothing in this bill prohibits management from addressing any worker issues related to prejudice or discrimination, as we expect that some testifiers today may suggest. What it actually does is protect nurses when they're on the job, trying to care for patients, by addressing well-documented issues that we know nurses are facing. With that, I thank you for the time, and I will be around for the rest of the hearing if you have questions.
Thank you very much, Ms. Cunningham, for that overview and for your testimony today. I'll turn it very quickly to Senator Port, who's joined us. Would you like to say a couple words before we continue on with the testifiers?
Welcome. Thank you, Madam Chair. I know we are in a time crunch here, and I want to make sure we're able to discuss this. So I'll turn it over to testifiers and save my comments for the closing.
Very good. Thank you, Senator Port. And now, Mr. Carlin, welcome to the Senate Labor Committee. Please go ahead and introduce yourself to us for the record, and we look forward to hearing your testimony.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Adam Carlin. I'm the Chief Nursing Officer at mHealth Fairview Southdale Hospital. I'm testifying in opposition to Senate File 2775. This bill mandating stringent nurse-to-patient ratios would create severe operational, financial, and patient access challenges. Here's what this bill looks like in the everyday reality of our hospitals. Scenario one, an operating room nurse calls in sick 20 minutes before the start of a shift. Without an immediate replacement, the hospital, in compliance with the law, must cancel an open heart surgery, a mastectomy, or a pediatric orthopedic procedure, all designated as elective and no doubt life-changing procedures. Under this bill, there is no flexibility to adjust with existing staffing and no ability for leaders to step in without risking fines. Scenario two, a nurse must leave an hour early for a family emergency, and an experienced supervisor with 25 years of nursing experience on that very same unit steps in to cover. Under this bill, that action would be illegal, triggering $25,000 fine and potentially reporting to the Board of Nursing of the supervisor. Yet, if a physician left the shift under identical circumstances, there would be no penalty or no professional board reporting. Scenario three, a mandated staffing committee blocks expanded unit hours because nurses decline the necessary schedule adjustments to meet those hours. Later, during a busy after-hour shift, the lack of expanded hours is linked to a delayed patient case with a negative outcome. Under CMS regulatory authority, the CNO is ultimately responsible for staffing, and yet under this bill has been stripped of authority to make necessary adjustments. Minnesota's hospitals are already financially strained. Hospitals will be forced to scale back services to avoid the risk created with this legislation, because we know that life happens for our employees, as in the prior examples. This bill makes common sense adjustments for those situations illegal, and for nurse leaders, it actually restricts their practice authority designated under the Nurse Practice Act. This bill will reduce patient access to care, create bottlenecks in emergency departments, and delay medically necessary procedures for Minnesotans. Lastly, the provision allowing nurses to refuse assignments without clear guidelines opens the door to potential discrimination. Subjective refusal with next to no burden of accountability could disproportionately impact marginalized communities, worsening existing healthcare disparities for vulnerable populations, and leaving healthcare organizations with no recourse for coaching or corrective action. For these reasons, I urge the committee to reject Senate File 2775. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we have Jeremy Olson, and then we have virtually Kelly Hagen, I think, Hagen or Hagen. Is Jeremy Olson here?
Right here.
Oh, hi, Mr. Olson. Welcome to the Senate Labor Committee. If you'd please introduce yourself for the record, we look forward to your testimony.
Chair McEwen, members of the Senate Labor Committee, good afternoon. My name is Jeremy Olson Ellard. I'm a registered nurse and proud union member and have worked at Hennepin Healthcare for over 10 plus years. I'm here today in strong support of Senate File 2775 because healthcare workers are saying enough is enough when it comes to unsafe, unsustainable staffing in our hospitals. Minnesota must make an unwavering commitment not only to doing more to address patient safety, but also to address the safety and burnout issues impacting nurses in our hospitals, which also negatively impacts every worker in the hospital. I want to talk about one shift that specifically stands out in my mind, one that why I and so many other nurses are leaving the bedside. Both of our ICUs were full, yet we were dangerously short-staffed. We sent out staffing alerts, pleading for help, and no one came. The house supervisor informed us that our only option was to triple our patient assignments. In the ICU, the standard is one nurse for two patients. That night, we were told that we needed to take three, even though some of those patients required critical one-to-one life-saving care. We pushed back, citing safety concerns. Instead of solutions, we were met with immediate intimidation from our leaders. Hospital administrators told us that what we were doing by refusing a new patient assignment because we determined it to be unsafe was illegal, even though the Minnesota Nurse Practice Act makes it clear that nurses are responsible for ensuring safe and appropriate patient care. If something were to go wrong with that patient, which is statistically more likely when a nurse is forced to take on more patients than they are capable or the acuity needs of the patient, those very same hospital administrators would face no scrutiny, but the nurse, the nurse would face more scrutiny and would have their license on the line, and it's the nurse who'd have to go in front of the Board of Nursing to explain that what they were doing was the best that they could under the working conditions created by the hospital executives. Let me ask you this. How can nurses be responsible for patient safety if we are threatened for simply standing up for it, which the law already requires us to do as nurses? That night, our nurses held the ground to do what we were trained to do, and then suddenly, after being belittled and threatened and intimidated by our bosses, the hospital miraculously found additional staff to meet some of those needs. But this only happened because we found a way to stick together through our union to push back. Not every nurse has this ability. That night made one thing painfully clear to me, to these hospital administrators, that profits matter more than the safety of their employees or the patients in the facility. My story, sadly, is not unique. According to MNA's 2023 Why We Left report, which surveyed nurses who are leaving their jobs at the bedside, nearly 70% of nurses reported burnout from unsafe working conditions. If this crisis continues in Minnesota, we will lose even more skilled nurses, not only because they don't love patient care, but because they are being forced to choose between their patients and their own license, safety, health, and well-being. I recently had the option to return to the bedside after being laid off from a different position. I wanted to because critical care is my passion. But when I thought about the countless times that hospital leadership chose profits over patients, ignored staffing concerns, and retaliated against nurses, I knew that nothing had changed. The healthcare workforce is in a state of crisis, and the solution is to listen to the workers who are telling you exactly what they need to stay in and provide the high-quality patient care. Our highly trained, highly skilled nurses are telling you what we need is safe staffing ratios in hospitals. We need more explicit protections for workers who raise concerns about the unsafe assignments, which state law already compels nurses to do. Thank you, Senator Port, for authoring this bill and for your time today, Madam Chair, and committee members. I'll also be available to answer any questions.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Olson-Ellert. Now, virtually, we have Kelly Hagen. Did I pronounce your last name correctly? Can you hear
That's
us
correct.
All right?
Yes.
Okay. Welcome to the Senate Labor Committee. You can introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Kelly Hagen. I'm the Chief Nursing Officer at Rainy Lake Medical Center in International Falls, Minnesota. We're a 25-bed critical access not-for-profit hospital. I've been a registered nurse for over 40 years and a nurse leader for 28 or more of those years. I am very proud to be a nurse leader, and I'm grateful for the opportunity to share my concerns on Senate File 2775. I would like to talk about how hospitals staff their care units and how difficult it would be to operationalize the care if mandated nurse-to-patient ratios came into effect. We obviously look at nurses' skill set, their expertise, how many years of experience they have, and what type of hospital unit they are best suited for. Hospitals obviously match educational expertise and skill with the appropriate units. Several times a day, we assess patient volumes and staffing to ensure the needed resources are planned for that we need to deliver that care. We must also consider the acuity of the patients that we have and adapt to changing situations as they present. Flexible staffing models allow us to respond to that change without having too few or too many nurses to provide the care to the patients that are in need. We review that staffing model as necessary several times a day to ensure we're always able to support our nurses in the care they need to deliver and ensure that our patients have that care that they need to receive. All Minnesota hospitals are required to have staffing plans that are publicly reported with quarterly information about the actual staffing levels and the number of patients. That data even shows what other types of healthcare professionals were available on that shift, and if the planned number of nurses, as well as the anticipated number of patients, was more or less than what occurred. Life happens, and sometimes hospitals get busier than anticipated. Hospitals are constantly adding additional nurses to shifts, particularly when nurses call in sick and sometimes on relatively short notice. At Rainy Lake Hospital, we have a collective bargaining agreement, and this process of calling in additional staff is detailed in that agreement. We have already worked through that process with our nurses, and it is articulated there. We do include our nurses in those conversations at all opportunities during the days that we have to discuss how nursing and staffing ratios and nursing and staffing assignments are looked at. And if we are not able to identify additional nursing support, then nursing leaders, charge nurses, supervisors, or even myself provide direct patient care. This is a good thing for patient care, and the bill would say the hospital is out of compliance with that ratio. Of course, nurses are needed for quality health care delivery, but there is little evidence that strict enforcement of mandated ratios improves quality, safety, or outcomes. And in fact, the bill, if implemented, would adversely affect patients. For example, ratios in an inpatient setting will result in longer wait times for patients in an emergency department because they would be backlogged if we couldn't get them in. Patients would not be allowed to be admitted if it was above that ratio. Patients would simply languish in the ED if it is crowded, as they frequently are. In addition, hospitals will be forced to turn away patients because they'll have to go on diversion and potentially shut down some of their units because they don't have enough nurses to meet those ratios. This is very frightening for us in rural Minnesota, where the distance between hospitals are sometimes hundreds of miles apart. This is also bad news for our stretched EMS providers who have to seek services at multiple hospitals before they can find one that can accept a patient that they're transporting. It would also mean that EMS services would not be able to respond to another ambulance or 911 call if they could not admit their current patient to the local emergency room. Transportation is a key issue today. Imagine if we had to strain that resource even further. How many lives would we impact? How many lives might we lose, not to mention how we would transport a patient needing a higher level of care with no EMS or ambulance services available? This would be inexcusable. How would we explain that to a family or to you if that was your family member? Sorry, Mr. Smith, we had no ambulance to transport your loved one to receive the care they needed for their heart attack. We have ratios to maintain. Please realize that hospitals across the state are either losing money or barely surviving. There are not a lot of profits anywhere. Imposing ratios would add considerable cost to the healthcare system. Many of our hospitals cannot absorb those costs. And in rural Minnesota, the hospitals and nursing homes employ just about every nurse that lives in that area. Minnesota has very good healthcare. I urge you to not create unnecessary barriers to that care, the care that threatens access to life-saving care. Thank you so much for your consideration and for hearing my comments today. I will be available for any questions.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we have Ryan Hilmo, followed by Margaret Kalina. Welcome to the Senate Labor Committee. If you'd please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, Chair McEwen and members of the Senate Labor Committee. My name is Ryan Hilmo. I'm a registered nurse at St. John's Hospital. Thank you for allowing me to testify today. I've been a registered nurse for almost 4 years and previously worked at United Hospital. I'm here to tell you just how real and dangerous staffing struggles have become in healthcare facilities across your state, not just for patients, but for the nurses and frontline workers who are being pushed past the breaking point. Large healthcare corporations prioritize profit margins over safe working conditions, leaving nurses in impossible and unsafe situations. Today, I want to share what happened to me personally. In 2023, after a legislature failed to pass safe staffing legislation to improve our workforce, I arrived at another stressful shift at my Alina facility's cardiac unit, only to find that the situation was not just stressful, it was outright dangerous. That day, our unit had three times the number of highly acute patients than what was planned. My assignment was completely unmanageable. So I did what the Nurse Practice Act tells me I must. In this case, I requested a reassignment so that my patients could receive the level of care they were hospitalized for and that they needed, only to find that every other nurse on the floor was in the same dire situation. There was no way to redistribute the workload amongst the nurses on the unit to make it safer. Even our charge nurse agreed that the situation was unsafe for both patients and staff. Medical errors are the third leading cause of death in the United States. I never intend to contribute to that statistic, but I easily could have if I had gone against my best professional judgment and accepted that assignment. When the charge nurse asked hospital management if any extra nurses were available, we were told that indeed additional nurses were available in-house, but that our unit could not have one. When we escalated our concerns and repeated our request for safe staffing, the response from our chief nursing officer was appalling. The CNO stormed into the room, called us ridiculous, threatened to fire us, and told us we'd be reported to the Board of Nursing, where our licenses could be revoked. We were accused of abandoning our patients. And then, despite what I've told you about the state of the hospital that day and how overworked everyone was, the entire cardiac unit was dismissed for the day without pay, and we all faced severe disciplinary action. This is what happens when nurses advocate for safe staffing, which the Nurse Practice Act requires us to do. We are intimidated, retaliated against, and threatened with not only losing our jobs, but our entire nursing careers. This is why we need legislative action. Without enforceable protections, nurses will continue to be punished for doing the right thing. There's been a push to join the Nurse Licensure Compact as a solution for staffing shortages, but I want to be clear, this is not the answer. This does nothing to address the root cause of our staffing crisis, which is that unsafe working conditions drive experienced nurses away from the bedside. Bringing in more out-of-state nurses under the compact does not fix the fundamental problem. It only gives nursing hospital corporations a larger pool of workers to exploit and drive away. The issue is not a lack of staff. The issue is that nurses are leaving direct patient care because they are burned out, overworked, and subject to dangerous conditions. Trying to add more nurses from out of state to the workforce without addressing conditions that push them out will only lead to more turnover and an endless cycle of shortages. I am not asking for a stress-free job. I know that nursing is demanding. What I am asking for is basic fairness, the ability to provide safe patient care without retaliation. Nurses deserve reasonable working conditions to deliver life-saving care. Patients deserve nurses who are not stretched so thin that we cannot safely do our jobs. We need safe staffing legislation and protections against retaliation for speaking up about unsafe conditions. We need real accountability for hospital executives who knowingly place both workers and patients in harm's way. We need your help. Thank you for your patience and your time and consideration.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Next, we have Margaret Kalina, followed by Rachel Anderson. Welcome to the Senate Labor Committee, and I don't think I need to repeat the routine after you.
Thank you. Madam Chair and members of the committee, I am not Margaret. She had to leave unexpectedly. I'm another nurse leader that is sitting in her place, and I want to thank you guys for this opportunity. My name is Heather Safner, and I am a registered nurse at Wellia Health, a critical access hospital in Mora, Minnesota. I am frustrated by some of the statements that have been made about the nursing profession. One of the key components of my work is to help provide everything that our nurses and other healthcare providers need to do their jobs. Nursing is a wonderful career, and I highly recommend it to just about everyone that I am in contact with. Wallet Hub has just ranked Minnesota the best state in the nation for healthcare for the second consecutive year. Minnesota's ranking is based on 44 key indicators, including cost, access, and health outcomes. In this analysis, the quality of healthcare mattered as much as the cost. They rank Minnesota as having the sixth best hospital care in the country, and residents have the fifth highest life expectancy. Minnesota was also highlighted for having low maternal mortality rates, and it also takes about 16 minutes for the average person to be seen in emergency departments. Similarly, I ask you to Google best states for nurses. Once again, Minnesota ranks at or near the top. According to several sources, Minnesota's nurse salaries are the highest in the country when adjusted for cost of living, over $100,000 a year, about 5.5% above the national average. Minnesota hospitals have also been reducing the number of hours a nurse needs to work in order to qualify for benefits. Many hospitals now offer benefits after 2 12-hour shifts per week. And over half of all hospital nurses are now opting to work part-time to have more of a work-life balance. There are not many careers that allow this much flexibility. I know nursing is hard work, but it is also rewarding work. This bill, if passed, could diminish the quality of care we have in Minnesota, creating arbitrary limits on how many patients a nurse can care for. The bill obviously raises costs significantly without any demonstration of quality improvement. And of most concern is the number of Minnesotans who would not be able to access the care they need. Please vote no. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Safner, and I apologize, I had gotten your name wrong. Next, we have Rachel Anderson, followed by Mary Krinke.
Dear Chair McGoon and committee members, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Rachel Anderson. I'm a registered nurse at Fairview Southdale, as well as the Vice President of National Nurses United. I have been caring for Minnesotans since 2011, including serving in the ICU during the COVID-19 pandemic. Today, I'm here to bring to your attention the growing crisis of workplace violence in our hospitals, a crisis exacerbated by chronic intentional understaffing that creates unsafe work conditions for nurses and dangerous environments for patients. Understaffing not only increases patient risk, but it also directly contributes to workplace violence. With too few nurses, we cannot properly assess and intervene in escalating situations, leaving both staff and patients vulnerable. Currently, our hospital only staffs 2 to 3 security guards at any given time, with the number dropping to 2 during night shifts. Just this week, a violently aggressive patient left his ICU room, damaged the unit while searching for staff to assault, and attempted to enter patient rooms. When staff attempted to utilize our only distress signal, it failed to reach our on-site security. By the time security was notified overhead and responded, approximately 9 minutes later, one nurse had already been punched in the face. Due to understaffing, only one security guard was available, and the situation was only brought under control when the Edina Police Department arrived. This level of violence is not an isolated event. It is a systemic issue. Within my first year as a new nurse, I was strangled with the telephone cord while pregnant, had a walker thrown at me, and was subjected to inappropriate physical contact by a patient. When I reported the latter incident to a coworker, I was advised to remain silent out of fear out of retaliation. Management prioritized patient satisfaction over staff safety. Wow. The failure to adequately staff hospitals does not just mean longer wait times or increased workload. It means nurses are left defenseless against violent situations that could be prevented with proper staffing. Safe staffing levels are not just a matter of efficiency. They are a matter of worker protection and patient care. When hospitals fail to employ enough nurses, we lack the critical support needed to de-escalate crises before they turn violent. We've all heard the phrase, look for the helpers. You will always find people who are helping. Right now, the helpers are looking to you. We need legislative action to mandate safe staffing levels in every hospital, on every shift, every day. Nurses deserve to leave their workplace in the same condition they arrived, and patients deserve safe care in a safe environment. I urge you to support policies that ensure adequate nurse staffing to protect both healthcare workers and the patients we serve. Thank you for your time and your consideration.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we have Mary Krinke, followed by Chris Rubish.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Mary Krinke, and I'm with the Minnesota Hospital Association. I have four comments that I would like to share with you today, raising significant concerns with the bill. Number one is the use of technology. The bill has language that prohibits the use of patient video monitoring. Video monitoring can help prevent patient falls and can alert staff to agitated patients. Technologies can reduce the time it takes to do care documentation. These tools support nurses. They do not supplant our care teams. Prohibiting the use of technology is not how Minnesota became a healthcare leader. Number two, the ratios proposed in this bill would be nearly impossible to implement. I just want to give one example. Of particular note is the bill calls for a nurse-to-patient staffing ratio in hospital emergency rooms of 3-to-1. Patients in emergency departments have very differing care needs. Sometimes it could be a minor ear infection versus a cardiac arrest. We don't know what trauma cases are going to be brought into the hospital, but I just want to add that this is in stark contrast to EMTALA, which is the Emergency Medical Treatment and Active Labor Act that requires hospitals to care for anyone who shows up in the emergency room. Number three, the overwhelming demand for additional workforce. MHA looked at our hospital admissions in 2024 and compared it to the ratios in this bill. Hospitals in Minnesota would have to hire an additional 4,500 additional nurses to meet the ratios that are in this bill. I do have one thing of good news that I would like to share with folks. Last year, Minnesota hospitals hired a record number of new nurses, 5,272 new nurses, outpacing the number of departures and retirements. The vacancy rates for nurses is finally dropping, but healthcare workforce still remains a challenge. The last issue that I want to bring to you all today is the bill, if implemented, would have significant negative impact on access to care. If we could not hire these 4,500 additional nurses, 138,000 patients would not have been able to receive care in our hospitals. This number does not include the patients that would have potentially had their surgical procedures canceled. The term elective procedures includes cancer surgeries, cardiac surgeries. Any procedure that is scheduled ahead of time is considered elective. It's not a good term, but in a hospital it is. And I just want to close by saying the biggest threat to access to care is if a hospital closes. Please look at the language very carefully in the bill. It says that if a hospital cannot meet the terms of the bill, a hospital could lose its license. So please understand that if you cannot meet the patient ratios called for in this bill, a hospital could lose its license. That ultimately is the biggest threat to patient access to care. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for your testimony. Before we proceed to our next testifier, I'm going to turn it over to Senator Port.
Thank you, Chair McEwen. Thank you, members. Chair McEwen is going to take my spot back here while I go present some other bills, but I just wanted to thank the committee for hearing this, and I wanted to thank the nurses who have continued fighting for this for literal decades. That's how long this argument has been going on, and in the meantime, we have seen an increase of nurses leaving the bedside. There is not a shortage of nurses.
there is a shortage of safe places for them to work. I urge us to please listen to the nurses, and I will say we brought this bill this year because we've been fighting for microscopic changes and compromises, and it's gotten us absolutely nowhere. So we're bringing what the nurses actually need to be safe at the bedside. We hope that this committee will engage with this process because it is clear without legislative action, this problem would just continue. It is our responsibility to move. And I understand that there are people who think we should shift this word or that word. Great. My office door is open. Let's make the bill work. But it has to happen. Yeah. It's time. Thank you, Chair McEwen, for taking the rest of this.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Senator Port. And I would just make sure that everybody understands we're at deadline, deadlines coming up, so that's why you're seeing all of this sort of crazy chaos at the Capitol right now with people coming and going and needing to present bills in different committees. Thank you, Senator Port. Senator Kupak is going to take the chair while I switch out here.
Okay, Mr. Rubish, if you would like to state your name for the record and begin your testimony, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, senators, and fellow nurses. My name is Chris Rubish. I am a president of the Minnesota Nurses Association, representing more than 22,000 unionized nurses and healthcare workers across the region. Minnesota stands at a crossroads in healthcare. For too long, nurses have been pushed past their limits and left by hospital administrators to take the fall when adverse events happen. I myself have been told by my hospital administrators, if a patient asks me if my unit is short-staffed or how many nurses are working with me on my shift, I am not to answer that question. Not exactly an inspiring boost of confidence that I can safely care for my patients, that I am not allowed to talk about safety with my patients. For years, we have marched, we have rallied, we have shared our stories. We've highlighted Department of Health reports showing increasing numbers of sentinel events in our hospitals. We've cited peer-reviewed studies like this one showing that hospital expenses go down when nurse-to-patient ratios are improved. Like this study showing that average length of stays decrease. Like this study showing that hospital readmission rates and adverse events all improve when nurse-to-patient ratios improve. And yet even in the face of overwhelming evidence, firsthand experiences of patients and workers, we continue to have this debate year after year. To our legislators here today, I will leave you with a paraphrase quote from former Minnesota Senator Hubert Humphrey that I hope you consider as you do the people's work. A society will be judged by how it treats its weakest members. And to every nurse, to every patient, to every healthcare worker who is here and listening and has been affected by short staffing, this is your moment. Stand up, speak out, and make sure our legislators hear us, because now is our time, and we can do this together. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rubish. And that concludes the list of testifiers that we have. And so I believe we will open it up for member discussion. Members. Senator Liske.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator McEwen, Senator Port, who was previously here. This is definitely not my first time hearing this bill or a version of it. I've been here for now going on my third session. And every time it's a little different story, a little different question, but always the same issue. I ask always the same questions and I never get a very solid answer to my questions, which is the other thing that concerns me. And this bill is definitely the strictest version of the bill that I've seen so far. In 2023, I was on the Senate floor when the Nurses at the Bedside Act was being heard. I offered an amendment that would delete literally only four lines from the bill. We would have had a bill probably passed had that amendment been accepted. It's quite frustrating that we are now here with a much more strict version, a much more difficult version to work with than we've ever had before, when we were that close to what could have been an agreed upon bill. I'm going to ask the same question that I have every single committee that it's been to that I sit on. What happens when, especially in this bill, when we have a 3-to-1 ratio of ER patients to nurses, when someone in my district is rushed to the ER, which is from Lonsdale to Northfield, is about a 20-minute drive, 15 to 20-minute drive, that's the nearest hospital. What happens when they reach that hospital and they find out that there's not enough room due to a staffing shortage? We'll start with that question.
Thank you for the question. And Mr. Chair, I am going to call on our experts who can speak to that question. Thank you.
Sure, Mr. Rubish.
Thank you. I certainly can turn to anyone else on the policy side, but I think one of the things that I think we're really missing here is that these situations are already happening, right? They happen every day. And I think the naked truth that we're not talking about is that in my hometown, in Duluth, there's a hospital system that's now owned by a Wisconsin-based conglomerate, and there are Duluthians sitting in the ER waiting for beds because that hospital system has chosen to admit patients from Green Bay, from Appleton, from Wausau, hours away in a different state, right? Because the patient is the commodity, right? And keeping that patient in the network ensures that they can continue to bill and get money, right? And so people in my district don't get beds because they're being taken by people who also need care from 8 hours away, 6 hours away, right? And so it's a good question, and I would just like to point out that already happening. And nurses paper over that every single day.
Thank you.
Senator Liske.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Thank you for the answer. Again, that didn't directly answer my question. My question is, what happens when we turn the patient away? Right now, they're, yes, admitted to the waiting room, right? I've had that experience. I sat in a hospital in Burnsville for 6 hours and was basically treated in the lobby. I had a possible appendicitis. Luckily, it wasn't, because sitting there for 6 hours with appendicitis is a pretty scary situation. I lucked out. I was given an IV and told to sit there and wait. I had the opportunity to go back, get a CT, and then go back to the lobby. That was my two options. And then the worst part is that the exam that I finally did get, the abdominal exam I finally got, was sitting in a chair behind a curtain. It wasn't on a table. It wasn't in a room. There was no bed because, like you said, there are no beds. I think there's a much greater issue going on than just the nurse staffing issue when it comes to the beds issue. So that didn't really answer my question for what do we do when my patient arrives at the, or my constituent arrives at the hospital in Northfield, gets told, no, we have a staffing shortage. We can't even bring you into our hospital because, of course, currently, had I been in Burnsville, which I was, the nurse still treated me, even though I was in the lobby. And I was probably well over the number of 3-to-1, based on the number of people that were sitting in the lobby. In this case, it's actually not just about the bed situation. They could turn you away based on how this is. In fact, the hospital would have to turn you away based on how this is written, because they would incur a $25,000 fine. And so now not only are they in Northfield getting told they can't be there, but now they have to go to the next hospital. They call the next closest hospital. The next closest hospital is either in Faribault or in Burnsville, the one that I'm talking about. And that's another half an hour drive. So now this patient who has been rushed by an ambulance to the nearest hospital gets told, no, there's nowhere for you to go. We can't take you in. Now they're on their way to one of these other hospitals. That's an hour wait at least before they're receiving care and likely a cardiac patient. That means that patient probably dies on the way to the next hospital. That's a concern to me. And so that's why I have a hard time with these bills, is because we do run the risk of not being able to take that person even in the waiting room. Because if a cardiac patient walks in and you at least can take them in the waiting room, guess what? They jump the list. If we have to tell them no because we're strict on number of patients to nurses ratio, we don't have the opportunity to tell them they get to jump the list.
Senator McKeown.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and thank you for this discussion. I think, you know, what I would posit to you, Senator, is I hear that you have these genuine concerns, but I think that by expressing them in the way that you are, you're misplacing the burden for who that responsibility should fall on. What we just heard from the president of the Minnesota Nurses Association is that this is already happening, and the burden for that is being placed on all of the nurses in our state. And so what we're trying to do with this bill is say, let's take that burden off of these workers' shoulders and put it where it belongs, on hospital administrators, and say they are the ones who have to do this. I think what you've sort of bought into is the sort of sky will fall stories that we're hearing from some of the hospital administrations, but actually what we'd be doing is putting the burden on them to make sure that that doesn't happen in the first place. That's what the bill would do. So I hear your concerns is very genuine, and I also would just point out again that Senator Port's office is open. And I would love to hear what your four lines were that you referenced earlier, because you could say it was only four lines, but as we know as legislators, those lines could mean everything or nothing. So I would love to hear what they are. But I invite people to go seriously talk about these issues with Senator Port and see what can be hammered out, because something needs to shift, and I agree that the problems in our healthcare system are much larger, but these burdens, this moral injury that is being committed day after day on the nurses who are giving care to people in Minnesota is absolutely unsustainable. And by doing this, we just are trying to shift the burden of who is responsible for making sure that patients aren't turned away. So, and I had also, I think Ms. Cunningham may have a response too.
Yeah. Sure, Ms. Cunningham.
And I apologize, Senator Olisky. I want to make sure we directly answer your question. No one will be turned away at an emergency department. This language does not supersede EMTALA, which requires any person to come into an emergency department to be treated. And so they will be treated. These nurses that you see behind you, those who work in the emergency department, their role is to triage. If a patient comes in and they are in an active heart attack, they are going to drop everything that they are doing, and they are immediately going to go to that patient. It doesn't matter how many patients are in that emergency department at that time. It doesn't matter how many nurses are. Their job is to triage. It is part of the Nurse Practice Act that sets out the standards that they are held accountable for. And so no one will be turned away. Now, if a hospital is regularly understaffing, yes, they are going to get fined. But I know of no other way in legislation to incentivize, whether it's a nonprofit, a business, et cetera, to follow the statute aside from fining them, which is, that's kind of where we keep going back to that place. And then I also just wanted to mention, like, I appreciate you sharing your experience in a hospital. Like, it's hard. I had a similar experience recently where I was treated in the hallway. They did their best, but what I know that I think a lot of people don't understand is you were probably being treated in the hallway, not because there's a lack of beds, it's because there's a lack of staffed beds, and there are so many people who are staying in the emergency department because there's no staff staffing the empty beds that are upstairs to move other patients to those units. And so I think that that is just sort of like another one of those symptoms that is coming out of this problem. I appreciate you acknowledging that it is a problem, though, and I think that means a lot to the nurses who are in the room today.
Senator Olisky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator McKeown. Thank you, for Ms. Cunningham, for some of the explanation. In no way am I talking poorly about my nurses' experience. In fact, they were the only ones that really were giving me care that day, right? And I was very gracious and very thankful for what was happening. And they tried to help me through the scary situation, because even they were scared, because they sat there and go, well, this patient could easily be dying of an infection right in front of me, and we have no idea what's going on. And so with the nurse, I don't want to say anything poorly about what was happening. I think our healthcare system as a whole is something that needs to be addressed, and it's definitely something that I've put on my back to try and address at a much greater level, obviously. And the unfortunate part is I don't know that this will help in that situation at the current moment, because the negotiations on all that stuff is already tenuous. And so if we throw this on there, I'm not sure how that'll work. And it's not me trying to say that I don't think what you guys are asking for is outrageous in some ways. In fact, a large part of the bills have always been something that I support. It's just certain parts of it that I have a hard time with. And so I hope we can get back to something in the middle. I hope we can get there. I understand you guys don't want to compromise anymore. That's what this bill is about, is showing what a non-compromised version would be. I can't support the non-compromised version. Hopefully that makes sense. Thanks.
Other members, Senator Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I do have some concerns about this bill also, and I'll try to keep it real brief. Is one of the provisions about the hospital losing its license, okay? We already got hospitals closing. I don't think we want to see that happen, just over a staffing situation. The other thing I'd like to ask you, why in the bill and subdivision 2, page 9, why are you against the use of technology, such as AI or video? I don't understand that. Technology has been a benefit, as we heard testimony on. I mean, it's been a benefit. I own an independent insurance agency, and it's been a benefit to me. So if you'd like to respond to that.
Ms. Cunningham.
Thank you, Senator Grunhagen. The intention of this bill is not to fully prohibit the use of technology or artificial intelligence. We understand that there is a value to those tools in the workplace. The intention is that artificial intelligence and technology will not replace the thinking of the nurse. And so, for example, you wouldn't want a computer doing an assessment on you and determining, you know, what your care is. Like, they could help, they could provide suggestions, but ultimately that decision needs to be on the highly trained nurse who's taking into account things like your environment, maybe where you came from, things that AI, I think, would be very difficult for them to do. And so it is, we recognize AI can be a very important tool. We just don't want it to replace the people who are sitting behind me.
Senator Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for that response. But boy, you read that subdivision, it's sure like you want to prohibit the use of videos and AI. I'm sorry. I mean, I'm not an expert, but that's the plain reading of it. And I don't understand that part. The other thing I just say very quickly is, you know, I've seen this bill when I was in the other body quite a bit. And I think you're well aware that Rochester Mayo said if something like this passed, they weren't going to expand in the state of Minnesota, which I think is one of the reasons that it died last time. Second thing is, you know, I and I know people are sick of hearing this, I was 16 years on the school board, okay? Mm-hmm. And I was chief negotiator with the certified state. Oh, she says yes, yeah. What, are you agreeing with me?
Yeah. No?
Okay. All right, this is serious now, okay? We'll talk about that later. And I was the chief negotiator with certified staff. And one of the things Minnesota School Board Association drilled into my head time and time and time again is you do not negotiate away supervisory rights. You don't do that. And to tell you the truth, some of this bill could be duplicated in things I had seen when I was the chief negotiator in terms of micromanaging the superintendent and what actually happens there, whether it's the committee where you have 60%. So those are things that I think we're taking away. I'm not saying there isn't problems, and I guess I could go on, but the last thing I just say is this, is that I forgot what I was going to say. When you have, the other thing I was going to say is that my wife was in the hospital about 4 years ago. She fell and broke her elbow, and we went to Glencoe Emergency Room, and they couldn't treat it because it was broke, real bad break, very painful, and I do appreciate the nurses that took care of it at that time. But the person in the emergency room said, I noticed what they said, well, we have to call around and see if we can find an open bed. Okay. And I thought, wait a minute, you got somebody with a broken hand? So they came back in and said, well, fortunately, we did find a open bed at Regents Hospital. But I was concerned that maybe there's no open beds and we're going to be sitting here with a broken elbow. And I just think this bill takes us further down that path. And again, we can have honest disagreements, but again, if you want some of these changes, it should be negotiated between the employer and the employee. One of the problems I think about the state is they come in with one size fits all, and we pass the bill, and all of a sudden everybody's mandated, and there's a ripple effect to everything we pass. again, employers and employees need to negotiate this, and that's where it should be settled, not by the state of Minnesota, in my opinion. Thank you.
Senator Dornick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator McEwen, I just want to know the path of the bill. Do you know where it's going next?
Senator McEwen.
I believe, Senator Dornick, that it will be going to Human Services, but our intent for right now, I was just going to tell our,
Health and Human Services.
I'm sorry?
Health and Human Services. Sometimes
thank
it's
you very
confusing.
Much for the correction.
We're sorry. Confused even on that
difference.
Committee.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dornick.
Follow up and then,
thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. But it is my intent today to table the bill and to reconvene at 5 because we are running up against our time here now at 3 and we have a number of people who need to be in other committees starting from 3 to 5. So.
Senator Dornick.
Mr. Chair, I think we're done. If you want to move this bill.
Senator McEwen.
Thank you very much.
I would like to table it.
I'd like to table it for now.
Okay.
And I have some closing comments to offer whenever it's appropriate.
There are no other members then who.
Oh, Mr. Chair.
Yes, to Senator Dornick.
Yeah, so are you going to table it now then or do it? The next a recess and then do it.
Senator McEwen.
We will
table
we,
it and then come back and discuss more. Is that what you're saying? Or are you?
Perhaps, yes. The intent would be to table it for now and then to raise the issue perhaps at a later time.
Would you like to take the motion right now, though, to move it on to Health and Human Services?
Sure, we can go ahead and do that, as long as I get to offer a couple of closing comments before we all take off here.
Absolutely, you may do that.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator.
I just wanted to speak to the testifiers, all those for and against, and the nurses, and just thank you for coming and the work that you do. We appreciate it, and the health care that you provide for the patients and all those things. Is thank you for being here and thank you for the work that you do.
Okay. With that, I will add a couple of comments too before you go ahead. First of all, I'll echo Senator Dornick's view too. Thank you for all the work that you do. I'll also echo, I think, Senator Liskey's comments that we have a healthcare system that has an awful lot of problems to it. And I think we are constantly bringing bills like this forward to try to snip away at those problems. And, there is an underlying problem that we are still really not diving down deep to get to. And I think we've heard from plenty of our nurses of the conditions that they're working in. And I think they're trying desperately to correct those conditions that they're working in. And this is one of the ways that they're putting this bill forward to try to attempt to do that. So those are my thoughts, Madam Chair. Would you like to have your thoughts?
Yes, I would. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the collaboration to make sure that we were able to hold this hearing today. I just feel that this is such an important bill. As we've heard, a lot of us have been through a lot seeing this bill through over the years and have been sort of heartbroken when we saw the corporate power of the hospitals, of flex and make sure that some very common sense staffing levels were not put in place. I just want to thank so much the nurses who have come, not just today, but again and again, fighting for one another and also for their patients that they take care of every day. It means so much to so many people to see you come out like this and to fight for one another and to fight for your patients. I was raised by a nurse. My mom was a nurse her whole career in Duluth also. And so I grew up in a house with somebody who was fiercely devoted to the people that she was taking care of every day. And I remember even my mother back in the 80s and 90s talking about the staffing ratios and how much stress it was putting on her and how much stress it was putting on the other nurses. So what Senator Port said about this being a long time problem that has needed a solution for decades now, I've experienced that in my own family growing up. I just had a couple of quick responses to some of the testimony that we had heard. One big one that stuck out to me is we heard a couple of people testifying about how Minnesota, in comparison to other states in the United States, has some better numbers in regard to health care. I think that's good to know, but I also think that we all need to take a step back and see the forest for the trees, that in the United States, our healthcare system is terrible. And for us to be talking about being at the top of a terrible system is maybe not the flex that we think it is. So I wanted to offer that. And I just want to offer that in all of this, what I think was a very good discussion about, everyone is concerned about wanting to make sure that people are able to go to the hospital, get the care that they need. We all can take a page from the book of Senator John Marty, who has just joined us and who is the lead author of the Minnesota Health Plan and has been fighting for many years to try to bring universal health care to every Minnesotan and to take out the middlemen from that care. And I feel that that would be a real solution to a lot of the problems that we all deal with, including this one. But in the meantime, I strongly believe that we need to put the burden where it belongs. You know, up in Duluth, we have hospital executives making over $1 million a year. And when people see that sort of thing, when my constituents see that, when I see that, we see these executives being paid these really high salaries, and then we hear these stories of just heartbreaking anguish and being forced out of professions, being forced to put their licenses in danger, knowing that patients are maybe going to be hurt because they're not getting the care that they need. They don't have the staff to deliver the care. And those people being forced day in and day out to be in those situations. It's just, it's so wrong. And we heard the nurses come to us and say, you know, we go to the bargaining table, we try to fix this there. Administration tells us, well, if you want this fixed, you're going to have to go to the legislature. They go to the legislature. We say, sorry, you should take care of this in your bargaining. Oh, what are they supposed to do? This is where they're supposed to go for these solutions. And this is not too much to ask. So you have a lead author in Senator Port who is very willing to sit down and to hammer out compromise. And I invite people to do that, but we are gonna push forward on this. And I'm very glad that the version of the bill that we have heard today and that we are pushing is the version that nurses are asking for. Because that is where we should start. Absolutely, not a question. No way should we go back to a compromise bill that 2 years ago was killed by the Mayo Clinic. So I'm glad we're starting here, but I invite people to go talk with the lead author on this bill and make some progress on this, because this issue isn't going away, and it's time for us to put the responsibility where it belongs. So thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, everyone, for coming out and for the good discussion today.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Gruenhagen.
Oh, thank you. I could vote for moving this to Health and Human Services without recommendation. But otherwise, I think it needs quite a bit of additional work before it moves out of here, to tell you the truth.
Senator McKeown, what would be your preference?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that, Senator Gruenhagen. And I hear somebody else was expressing that, and I have felt similarly on some other bills that we've heard in other committees. I had a reconsideration myself about what my motion would be, whether to table or to move it forward to Health and Human Services. And I do think I would like to move it forward. I would like to move it forward with recommendation if we have the votes to do that. And I understand my colleagues' sort of reticence about wanting to see it move forward and discussion continue, but being a little bit hesitant about that as well. So I understand if we have a sort of a split on that point. But I would like to make the motion that Senate File 2775 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Senate Health and Human Services Committee.
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Senator McEwen, and to Senator Port in the other committee. I just really think this is just such an important, it's really a life-threatening issue and a life-saving issue. And I just want to applaud all the nurses in the room and out there and or who may be listening about how much we really appreciate you. I know we've all talked about I'm not gonna bore you with my personal hospital story or anything. I do have my youngest daughter is a nurse and a midwife, and so I'm familiar with that world through her. But I do, this is a labor committee. So I think in this committee, the important thing is that we support your work as laborers, as workers, and the kind of protections and safety provisions and support that you need, you know, whether being able to take a break, simple things like that. We were talking the other day in some committee about 15-minute bathroom breaks and, you know, the ability to do basic things like that in a work day, be able to have lunch if you're a hypoglycemic like me, I have to have lunch. And then that's totally beside the, you know, the life supporting work that you do in the hospitals. So I think that the Health and Human Services Committee, it's going to be up to them to figure out the rest of it. But for my position in terms of supporting workers and supporting labor, you have my support and my vote. Thank you.
Okay. And then with that, then let's have a vote on Senator McEwen's motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion passes and will be sent to the Health and Human Services Committee. With that, we are at 3:05 and we are up against, I'm supposed to be in higher education at the moment. So we are going to adjourn to the call of the chair. Recess to the call of the chair at approximately 5 p.m.